Timothy Westerhouse and his Cathedral Canterbury Choir and Collegium Orchestra, and I'll be accused of our only full excerpt being brass playing here. I'm guilty as charged. Emily Brown, who will be doing the horn part, and Eric Moe leading the trumpet section in that amazing stuff, among the other great soloists from our area. But then, kind of, if I can anticipate where you're going with this, because Bach spent such a large part of his life in this meant so much, he didn't try to keep the whole piece just within one unified style. He wanted every movement to be what it needed to be.
Absolutely. And later in his life, he had encountered more and more music in the old style, the stile antico. So we see Bach later in his life returning to an older style of composition in which vocal lines of length are prized, that textures are thinned, and even occasionally quoting music not necessarily just of the German tradition. We know Bach is famous for quoting all the Lutheran chorales. We just kind of celebrated the Reformation, his quotes of Ein Festeborg, and using that as a grounding. He also draws on the plain chant tradition. So in the second half of the B minor Mass, which he composed largely towards the end of his life, we see this great shift, and we hear the Gregorian, quote-unquote, plain chant in long tones in a fugue for the voices, as well as two violins and high parts. So we essentially have a six-part fugue on the tune, Credo in unum Deum, and that opens the second half.
We're going to fade there because we have so much more to cover on the B minor, this quick overview of the B minor Mass. But what I want to point out is the Credo is the famous one with all the words, while these others, Kyrie, had, you know, four words to consume 10 minutes. Here you have 400
so
words or something.
So much more text, exactly. Yeah. And what's interesting is which movements Bach decides, I'm going to spend a whole movement on this one phrase of text versus the bass solo, Et in unum Dominum, which has so much text. It's kind of a generic, nice aria for just a vehicle for lots of text. The movements in the Credo that he really focuses on lie at the central. There are nine movements in the Credo, and if you can kind of think about a mirrored symmetry with the first three movements pointing to the middle three, and then the last three get out of that. Those central three movements are, for Bach, a theological statement. Now, we can approach the B minor Mass from so many perspectives. The sheer musical beauty alone is enough to have great appreciation, awe, and wonder. But it is important to, whether it's our own or belief or not, to understand where Bach was coming from. And for him, he was a church musician. Mm-hmm. He inscribed Soli Deo Gloria, to God alone be the glory. At the end of almost all of his scores, instrumental and vocal. So when we come to the three movements at the center of the credo, we see for Bach, this is the crux. This is the center of the Christian belief.
And because it's the second person of the Trinity.
It is. And it's the three mysteries that this Christ figure, et incarnatus est, was made incarnate, was made human. God becomes human. The second, that human being was crucified, yet out of that comes resurrection, the hope, the rising from the dead. So Bach spends an inordinate amount of time on these three choral movements at the center of the credo.
You know, we do have time. We could play all three of them. So why don't you talk about the other two, about
sure.
the crucifixus and the resurrection.
So just briefly, in the Et Incarnatus Est, listen for the voices as they literally descend from the high heavens, the high part of their range, down low. Bach paints that picture really easily. For us to understand. In the Crucifixus, he writes the only passacaglia, the only lamento bass, which means this is depth of suffering. And we hear it in sharp, short gestures in the basses, hearing that chromatic descent. So listen, all the chromaticism of the crucifixion, we hear that pain. And when we hear the text, and was buried, it almost goes away. And then we have to pause because he was in the tomb for 3 days. And then bursting out of that comes the resurrection. Trumpets enter in, full chorus, full winds at that joyful moment.
All that happens in the next 10 minutes.
Thank you.
The conclusion of that whole sequence from the middle of the Credo of the B minor Mass, et incarnatus est, crucifixus, and et resurrexit. Clearly, if I hadn't given the titles, it should be pretty obvious what was going on there. Saving time for the Dona Nobis Pacem, Tim Westerhaus has put this performance together. It's Sunday at 3 at St. John's Cathedral. Let's first kind of say the soloist names. Andrea Olson and Amy Porter, the two sopranos, Amanda Glover, mezzo-soprano, Eric Betts, the tenor, Max Mendez, and Joshua Vanderplatz, the basses. These are some of your core folks that you make music with.
They are, and truly, when we started doing the works of Bach, in addition to the other music we do at St. John's Cathedral, this was the group that started clearly being cultivated as interested in this kind of music and yearning for these types of opportunities. And over the past, 4 years, ranging from solo cantatas to the Easter Oratorio, have really grown in their interpretation of the works by Bach. And that just happens with familiarity. It's a challenging language and requires such maturity, not just of technique, but of interpretation. And so, I treasure the coachings when we go in and everyone comes in with ideas and engagement in that. So it's a real honor to be with each of them for this project.
Nice. And a few more words about what every piece of music nearly should be ending with, Dona Nobis Pacem, and the way Bach did, and way and why Bach did that.
Yeah, so the text of the final movement is Agnus Dei, Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world, have mercy on us. But Bach separates from that movement the final three words, Dona Nobis Pacem, grant us peace. And it's the second time we hear the music. He used it in the Gloria for Gratias Agimus Tibi, we give you thanks for your great glory. Bach clearly is connecting the sense of gratitude for peace, and recognizing that this final compilation of this movement was during that period of occupation in Leipzig, Bach is clearly making a statement about his own personal and his community there in Leipzig, that there's a plea for peace. And it starts in a very simple way. It's a simple individual almost plea, but in the end, it sounds like peace wins out, with the trumpets just entering simply, nobly. Not like the Et Resurrexit with brilliant flourishes, but with just stately, firmly grounding message of that peace, I think, triumphing.
So on the way into that, thank you, for this hour of illumination, and B, for bringing this whole work to us Sunday afternoon.
It is a pleasure. It's a rare opportunity, and I look forward to sharing with everyone Bach's B minor Mass on Sunday.
And as Timothy was saying, the really noble and respectful way that it was ended with the Dona Nobis Pacem and even the trumpets with that sense of seriousness and purpose. Throughout this illumination of the B minor Mass, we've been hearing mostly from the John Eliot Gardiner version with the Monteverdi Choir and the English Baroque soloists. And again, a reminder that that's Sunday at 3 at St. John's Cathedral for that performance.